Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
Winter's over and the snow is gone. Go get your gloves and pull your work boots on. Gotta clear that patch, pick them stones. You know the sun is gonna warm those lazy bones. Winter's over and the work's just starting. Time to get busy in the family.
Today on Route 51, it's time once again to pull off the busy highway, put on our work clothes, and walk down that well-trodden path to the family garden. The carefully tended deep black soil, the seeds placed in shallow rows, and the promises of beautiful flowers, a harvest of homegrown vegetables, and a yard filled with trees and ornamental shrubs that are healthy and thriving.
Got a cool spring rain and a summer breeze. Yellow squash, black-eyed peas, Japanese kale and pinto beans, Italian tomatoes and turnip greens. Now we're picking and a-canning and working hard and trying to beat the winter to the family.
I'm Glenn Moberg, and as John McCutcheon once again kicks off the annual Route 51 Garden Show, and this is our 11th annual show, believe it or not, there is trouble in paradise. The emerald ash borer, which has turned up in Wisconsin Rapids and Stevens Point and threatens to devastate ash trees in our yards and forests all across Wisconsin. Joining us to talk about that and to answer all of your questions about growing vegetables, flowers, trees, and shrubs in our challenging and unforgiving northern Wisconsin climate, we welcome back our two resident experts and Portage County Master Gardener volunteers, Nick Schultz and Lynn Kane. Nick writes the Perpetual Gardener column for the Portage County Gazette. Lynn is an orchard owner who sits on the Wisconsin Master Gardener Association board and who served previously as the summer horticulturist for Portage County UW Extension. Now, we also want to hear your favorite gardening stories about what gardening means to you and your family, and if you've got some fresh from the garden recipes to share, we'd like to hear those too. Now, if you love Larry Mueller's Garden Talk every Friday, and who doesn't, we invite you to think of this show as garden talk for the cold northern half of the state, and you will find it easier to get through to this program than on Larry's show with its statewide audience. And the best time to call us is right now when we have wide open phone lines. Toll free, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a question on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I will read it on the air. Ladies, thank you for making yourselves available once again. And this is probably my favorite radio show of the year.
Thank you.
And I'm glad that you're a part of it.
Yeah. Good morning. We're happy to be here.
Yes.
Well, let's start with the breaking news this growing season. The emerald ash borer found just last week in Stevens Point and heading north. Could this insect destroy most of the ash trees in Wisconsin?
It will destroy them if people do not treat them. This is a situation that extension experts and foresters everywhere knew was coming. It was first identified in Michigan in 2002. And so it was really just a matter of when. And interestingly, in Stevens Point, our city forestry department worked with a couple different groups, including the university, to tie green ribbons around ash trees. About 300 ash trees in very visible main streets and public parks.
Well, that's what that means.
Yes. You did that in Marathon County as well.
Yeah, the Marathon County Courthouse, there are green ribbons tied around the trees.
And it basically said this is an ash tree and it's at risk of emerald ash borer. Some people I know thought that meant the trees were coming down. Well, that's not necessarily true, but if they're not taken care, if they're not treated, they probably within 4 to 5 years will end up succumbing to emerald ash borer.
So what do you do to treat them? If you have ash trees on your property that you want to save, what do you have to do?
What it is if they're...
And Lynn, you own an orchard.
So. Yes, I'm aware of this. If you have a small tree, say it's under 5 years, you may just want to consider taking it down and putting up a different tree that isn't an ash tree, because the treatments have to be done every single year. But if you have a beautiful old ash tree on your property that you want to save, so it'll be an investment, you can go and you buy a product. It's imidacloprid. So I-M-I, you can go online and,
so
and look
this
it
is
up.
Some kind it's of a chemical that you
it is a chemical. You'll put it in water, you'll mix it up, and you'll you'll wash it in. It's a soil drench. And then the tree will take it up, so it's a systemic. Now's a good time of year to do it because the trees are budding out, so they'll suck this right up into the tree, and then that protects it. So if the emerald ash borer bites into the tree, it'll kill it because it has a chemical in it.
What precautions do you have to take when using this chemical? If you have well water, should you be concerned about that?
You wouldn't want to dump it right by your well, obviously, but if you're just putting it in the root line of the tree, so it stays right in the drip line underneath your tree, you're concentrating it, so you're just going right around the tree. The tree will suck most of it right up into the tree. And like I said, only lasts a year. You know, it'll go right into the tree. That'll be it, you know. But you do have to be careful not to get it on other things because it will systemically go up into other plants. So if you have things that are flowering, that a pollinator, you know, bees. So those are the things that we think about. So you don't want to get it on those types of things that are flowering.
Because it might hurt the bees.
Right, because they would bite into the flowers or the nectar, and then it would also have the chemical in it.
And Lord knows the bees need all the help they
can
get right
now. This is right. And fortunately, bees don't feed on ash flowers because everything flowers. But ash trees don't have that type of flower that attracts bees, so this chemical will not affect the bees.
How long before the ash borer spreads throughout the entire state of Wisconsin? What's the prediction?
Once it's in an area, and it's hard to guess just how long it will take to get into an area, but I can tell you, so once it gets into an area, 4 to 5 years.
Oh, you got a map.
I have a map of an area of where firewood movement has been quarantined in the state, and that's based on either the emerald ash borer or the gypsy moth. So if it's been sighted, as it is in Portage and Wood counties, you're not able to move ash wood products outside of the county. Basically, it's the southern half of the state that has one or both of those insects. And then, let's see.
And it looks like north central Wisconsin is by and large in yellow right now. What does that mean?
Yellow means a gypsy moth quarantine.
Gypsy moth quarantine.
So, and yeah.
All right, we do have a picture of the emerald ash borer on the Route 51 Facebook page. And if you'd like to go on that page and have a question for our resident garden experts, again, Lynn Kane and Nick Schultz are with us this year for Garden Talk just for the frigid northern half of the state. 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to Jesse, who's on the road with a question about a cherry tree. Jesse?
Yeah, hi. I've got a tart cherry tree that I planted, I guess, 2 seasons ago. And the bottom half of it bloomed out beautifully, but the top half didn't. It's not brittle, but I'm wondering if there's something that I can do differently or if that top half is going to bloom.
Lynn Kane?
I can tell you that tart cherries are very susceptible to frost injury of any kind. And as it was setting those buds in the upper part of the canopy, it probably was more affected by the cold perhaps than the bottom half. Sometimes in young trees, they don't all bloom out because your newer growth is on the top and your older growth is on the bottom. So the older growth is blooming out, whereas the top isn't quite mature enough to set its flowers yet. So as long as it has leaves on it, it looks healthy. I wouldn't worry about how the bloom pattern is. As the tree matures, it will bloom out throughout the whole tree.
And it will leaf out up top, too, eventually?
So there are no leaves even on the top, is what you're saying.
Correct. On the top, there are no leaves, but there are leaves and blooms on the bottom.
If there's no leaves on the top, that part of the tree, for whatever reason, seems that it, you know, probably isn't alive anymore. What you're going to want to do is perhaps leave it. Because if it has something wrong with it, the whole tree may die, you know, when you're seeing death in a tree. But if it comes through the whole season and then next year it still buds out and there's just a dead part, you could prune that part off then and then let the rest of the tree come out.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Jesse. Again, 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation. If you've got a question about gardening or growing healthy shrubs and trees in our inclement northern climate. Yes. Lynn Kane, you're an orchard owner. What kind of trees do you grow in your orchard?
We have all heirloom trees. We bought the property.
All apples?
All apples. But we do have two pear trees. We have like two cherry trees. You know, we're adding because as the apples were old, they're like 50-year-old trees, so some of them are dying. And so as some of them die out, we've been putting in other fruit just to get some variety. But we're also grafting the heirlooms onto new rootstock.
What kind of apples are you growing that most people may not have heard of before?
Frankly, I don't even know what they are because they're 50 years old. The woman that owned the property passed away, and so we have no idea what the apples are. So what we do is we name them ourselves. So we say, oh, that's the cabin door tree. That's the pretty tree.
You wrote to me that you have an old transparent apple, yellow, yes. Fragile, and sweet.
Yes, yes. And what that is they're the yellow apples. They are the very first ones to ripen. But they are not keepers. You can't keep them. Even when you pick them, they bruise. They're so soft. But they make fantastic applesauce, fantastic pie filling because they cook right down. They're a cooking apple. Those are the best. Everyone comes for those because they're the first apple.
You know, you ask about family stories and gardening. We had a transparent apple tree. I grew up on a dairy farm in Brown County, and the tree was next to an old outhouse. So those, we called them the toilet apples. Now, can you imagine making apple crisp with toilet apples?
1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation. Chris in Wisconsin Dells, you were on the line and we lost you. Give us a call back and we'll try to get your call in. The Perpetual Gardener, tell us about your column, Nick.
It's every other week in the Portage County Gazette, which is a weekly publication.
And what have you been writing about recently? What's been on your mind?
Let's see. Actually, Emerald Ash Borer was a recent column. I tend to write a lot about native gardening and the importance of choosing plants that attract pollinators and diversity, because when you have native plants, you tend to get more, not only pollinators, but songbirds and wildlife. We love to garden.
Well, the pollinators, again, that comes back to the question of bees. We got this bee hive collapse disorder, and we've lost something like 60% of the honeybees in Wisconsin. Any chance we're going to turn that around, and what are the causes?
We just currently had one of the professors from the Extension come in and gave us a talk, and she said there's a very big difference between bees that they're keeping in a box that they move around for, you know, orchards and cranberries and things like that, and native bees. And so a lot of the colony collapse, which is what you're talking about, are the bees that are kept in these boxes because they're moving them around. They only eat one thing. So they'll put them in an apple orchard, all they get is apple pollen. They put them in a cranberry marsh, all they get is cranberries. So what they're trying to encourage people to do is to build up the native bee population. And so our native bees need the same thing. They need a diversity of things to eat. So they in your gardens, you want to put flowers that bloom all from spring till fall. So they always have different things to eat. They're encouraging some of our farmers to leave wild areas between their fields so that the bees will have something to eat, you know, and get away from the monoculture and that sort of thing. And so they're studying it right now and they're finding. But you definitely have to know that there's a difference between bees that are kept in a box and native bees that are living
I've seen online, and I never know what to believe when I
right.
see these. pesticides are to blame, and that France is even banning some pesticides because they're so concerned about the bees.
And what it was like we just had with the earlier discussion. If you're putting down a pesticide when something is blooming and the bee comes and eats it, that will affect the bee. So you have to be aware of that even in your own yards. If the dandelions are in your – the bees will feed on dandelions. So if you're spraying them and then the bees are coming, well, they're ingesting that. So the idea is maybe you should mow the dandelion flowers off, then treat the lawn, because then the bees will not be coming to the flowers anyway.
Or,
so it's just a thought process.
Pick them and make dandelion wine.
Exactly. Or dandelion, like you get a bucket and a knife. That's what I do.
Dandelion greens in your salad.
Yes.
Oh, and one other thought on pollinators. It's important to note that there are so many different pollinators. They're not just bees, native or honeybees. They're also a lot of wasps are pollinators. Moths are pollinators, nighttime especially. So there
bumblebees.
Are bumblebees. Yeah. Yes, butterflies. Moths. So there are many different pollinators.
1-800-780-9742. 1-800-780-9742. It's the Route 51 Garden Show with gardening advice just for the frigid northern half of the state. Let's go to Paula in Mosinee. Paula, you're on Route 51.
Thank you for taking my call. Last week, Larry was talking about beetles on lilies. So we went out, we have lily, and we just checked them, and there were beetles all over them. And they're just coming up. Now, we tried to get them all off. What do I do about them? Do I spray them? It's like they go down to the roots, and it's like they're eating off the whole plant. And we squeezed them. There's orange, you know. We just didn't know what to do with them. Now, do we spray them? Does that do anything? Do we dig them back up? Or
I can tell you that this is a big problem, especially in Marathon County. They're one of the few counties that has this problem, although it's now spreading into Portage County. It's called the lily leaf beetle. And, again, it's an invasive that came in on product that came from somewhere else.
Yeah.
It's very damaging to only true lilies. So
right.
Not daylilies or anything. It's just
right.
True lilies. Yeah. What I would do, you can go to your Marathon County UW Extension website or call your extension office. They have all the information on, you know, how it should be handled, what should be done about it, and what you can do. Picking them off, of course, is a wonderful way to start. I mean, that helps. But
that's what we did, and we tried to get all everything, you know, and then the next day we found some more, but now I haven't checked, but it's like that they go right down to the root. And
right.
Last year, our whole stalk was just
right.
Off.
Yes, they're very, very damaging. But I would go to it's marathon.uwex.edu. Go to Lily Leaf Beetle. They have a whole extension page about it, because it's been a very bad disease, especially here in Marathon County.
And it just happened. It never
right.
did before.
It started last year, and
okay,
so it's just coming in. Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you for taking my call.
Paula, thanks so much for the phone call. 1-800-780-9742. And John called us up, and he wants a clarification on exactly what chemical we're supposed to use for the emerald ash borer. Lynn, if you could repeat that information.
Okay,
for us.
It's called imidacloprid. It's IMID. Am I spelling?
Okay, we're going to tag team this. Okay, IMID, ICLOP as in Paul, RID as in David. Now, that's the active ingredient. There are several products that have that.
Why don't you name the products? Do you have any of
it would be like Bayer Tree and Shrub is one of them.
Okay.
B-A-Y-E-R, like the aspirin, they make a lot of the products that you can buy, like at any box store would carry them. And I'll go, like in the previous caller, the Marathon Extension website also has a huge write-up on emerald ash borer right now, and they would have all the information on
there. All right,
there.
So go to the UW Extension site for Marathon County.
It's marathonuwex.edu.
Mm-hmm. And most of the extension sites do have,
right.
And many of the urban forestry, the city of Stevens Point has a lot of links, including one that helps you identify whether you have an ash tree. So, you know, if we step
right.
back
right.
and say, okay, how do I even know if I have one? It's important to know that. Mm-hmm. So if one other thought about the treating emerald ash borer, if your tree is more than 12 inches in diameter, it's not a bad idea to actually use a certified arborist to treat it. Get a couple estimates, you know, decide, you know, who in your area can help
bring
you
an expert in. Let's go to Chester in Athens. Chester, you're on Route 51 with our two guests.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. Last October, my home was overwhelmed more than ever with the Asian beetle, and now they're still trapped inside the house, and I'm wondering whether or not these beetles should be treated as pets, or do they serve a good? In other words, when I vacuum them up, should I let them go? And what benefits do they have to, like, the flower gardens or the gardens, if any?
Well, the beetles were brought, a lot of times what they do is they go after the aphids that are on a lot of plants. So they do serve a purpose. Now, in the numbers that we've had, I don't know, you know, if we need that many. But and oftentimes, if you're going to vacuum them up and take them outside, next fall they're probably going to come right back into your house.
Well, what's the difference between Asian beetles and the old-fashioned ladybugs? They look kind of the same.
Yeah,
they do. It's the number of spots on them. But
and the Asian beetles seem to be much more prolific.
Yes. And those are the ones that show up in your house. Yeah, the old-fashioned ones that we like don't tend to show up in your house. You know, the good news about that is they're annoying. And Chester, I don't want to diminish that at all because they are. But they're not really harmful. So feel free to vacuum them up if they're where you don't want them.
Chester, they answer your question?
Yes, thank you so much. Have
all right, thanks. Thanks for the phone call, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. This is the Route 51 show for a garden show just for the northern half of the state. And we have added a dandelion salad with warm bacon dressing recipe on our Facebook page. Speaking of recipes, ladies, dear listeners, we would like you to call in with your favorite fresh from garden recipes. We're trying something new this year. And Nick, why don't we start with you? You've got a simple pizza sauce, Nick and Bill's pizza sauce.
We love to make our own pizza sauce, and this is something that my husband and I have done for as long as we have been married. And it is so indeed simple. It's tomatoes and fresh basil if you have it, and oregano and garlic.
Tell us the process. What do you have to do?
You just chop up a cup and a half of tomato, pill seed and chop. Pick your basil and your oregano, wash it up, chop it up, or you don't, just roughly chop it. Same with 2 cloves of garlic, and throw it all in a food processor or a blender, and
with a little bit of salt and pepper.
Thank you, a little bit of salt and pepper. Yep, and you're good to go.
And I've got a recipe that I'd like to share with you. This is something that I use every year, particularly in like July and August when the tomatoes start coming in and I'm being overwhelmed with zucchini. All right, here's my zucchini marinara. It's very simple. You take 2 zucchinis or 1 zucchini and 1 yellow squash, no more than 1.5 inches in diameter, cut into circular slices with the skin on. Take 1 to 2 cups of grape tomatoes, slice each of them in half. Coat a cast iron skillet with olive oil, maybe an eighth of an inch deep. Sprinkle in caraway seeds and 2 to 3 cloves of garlic mashed up. When the seeds and the garlic start sizzling, add the tomatoes and chopped up fresh basil and tarragon leaves from your herb garden. You can add a small chopped up red onion if you'd like. Then add the squash, cook until it just starts to soften, covered with grated Parmesan or Romano cheese. And the whole process takes about 10 minutes, and it's wonderful.
Sounds good.
And a good way to get rid of some of that zucchini overtaking your garden. 1-800-780-9742 if you've got recipes, stories about gardening that are important to your family, or questions for our resident experts. Let's go to Lenore in Stevens Point. Lenore, you're on with Nick and Lynn.
Yes, I have a lot of hydrangeas, and I get I'm guessing it's a small spider, I'm not sure, but it like seals the leaves together And then it, if I don't take them off, which is a real chore, it just seems to spread and spread. And literally the leaves of the hydrangeas just get like stuck together or glued together. What is it and what can I do?
Wow.
Uh-oh. You have puzzled our experts.
Generally with any kind of bugs or things like that, if you just take soapy water and oftentimes just wash them away, that will just help to, like, tell them to go somewhere else or you don't. That's a very simple thing to do without knowing. Now, if you can trap the spider and take it into your extension office, they can take a picture of it and send it right into the entomologist in Madison. He'll tell you exactly what it is and exactly, you know, what to do about
it. I've got a question. Are these small-looking spiders?
Well, I don't ever see the spider. When I
could they be spider mites? Could they be spider mites? They leave webbing on flowers and plants that can, you know, mash them together.
No, there's no webbing. When I pull the leaves apart, there's a little tiny, very tiny little green worm inside.
Okay.
So those are like a leaf roller. They're making their nest inside of there. And so what they'll do is they'll make their nest, they'll lay all their eggs, and then as they keep attack. So, again, if you want to wash them off, pick them off, you know, you want to get them out of there so that they're not, multiplying and continuing their life cycle. So you want to break their life cycle at some point. Again, if you want to take a sample into your extension office, they probably could give you a whole flyer about it. But if you just want to do something simple, I would pick them off, get them out of there, or wash them off with some soapy water.
And with the soapy water, it could be as simple as a couple drops of dish soap in a spray bottle, and then that the emulsion from that the spray might knock them down. So,
Lenore, thanks so much for the call.
You are saying before I see the leaves, I should do the soapy water.
I would get it right on the bug. You're trying to get rid of the bug.
But okay, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you, Lenore. And I have just checked that clock on the wall, and I am way late for our break. So we're going to take a quick break. I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to our annual Route 51 Garden Show with our resident experts Nick Schultz and Lynn Kane, 1-800-780-9742. If you've got a question, that's 1-800-780-9742. Here's Guy Clark with a song about homegrown tomatoes.
Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning and out in the garden, get your ripe ones, don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forgot all about the sweating and the digging. Every time I go out and pick me a biggin'. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What would life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Thank you to the business sponsors who help support WPR programs. Businesses like the Girl Scouts of the Northwestern Great Lakes and Marshfield Clinic play a huge role in the success of WPR. For more information, go to WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Christine Bremer-Moogley of the personal injury law firm Bremer & Trollop, committed to protecting the rights of accident victims throughout Wisconsin. Bremer & Trollop, because the right results matter most. Bremer-law.com.
Here's a hymn to welcome in the day, heralding a summer's early sway, and all the bulbs all coming in to begin. Once upon it, yellow bonnets, garland all along, you were waking, and day was breaking, a panoply of song. And summer comes to Springville Hill.
The Decemberists taking us into our next segment of the annual Route 51 Garden Show with our resident experts Lynn Kane and Nick Schultz. We are taking your questions and phone calls at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Our lines are wide open right now. If you've got a question about growing flowers, vegetables, herbs, shrubs, trees in our inclement northern Wisconsin growing climate. This is Garden Talk just for the northern half of the state. We'd also like to hear those fresh from garden recipes if you've got something that you'd like to share with us, or a favorite family story about gardening, which is so important to so many of us. Well, ladies, what's new this year? Nick?
Let's see.
Do we have new varieties of tomatoes?
There are always new varieties of tomatoes. And Glenn, I know you like heirlooms, so I brought something. I'm kind of doing a little cheater here. there's this great article in Fine Gardening about what a chef grows, and here's one that that she recommends. It's called San Marzano Redorata. I hope I'm saying that right. Redorta tomato, and it's a sauce option, Roma, but bigger than most Romas. So nice. Probably have to grow that by seed.
I have seen that in my tomato growers catalog, yeah. And also the folks at the Young Seed Company or the Jung Seed Company. Yeah. Put out a catalog called Totally Tomatoes, yes. Which has all of these different varieties. You were mentioning before the show that there's a new variety or some varieties that are resistant to late blight, which we had a lot of problems with last year.
Yeah, we did have problems last year. Lynn has done a lot of research
right.
on that.
And what it is late blight also affects potatoes. And, of course, we all know that we live in a big potato area. And so it's not just the tomatoes in your garden. Late blight is, if you have it in your garden, it goes up into the wind and it blows all over and then everybody gets it. So it's a very, very devastating disease. And so the tomatoes, they're starting to breed them to have some resistance now to the late blight. So like our plant sale is this weekend at the Rettler Building in Stevens Point. And we will have Iron Lady tomatoes, they're called.
Really?
And they're resistant not only to late blight, but also to early blight, which most of us do get in our gardens where you start seeing the lower leaves get yellow. And sometimes it wipes out your whole, and you get, you know, all you have left are tomatoes.
If they hit your plants when they're young, you can just kiss the entire
right,
garden.
Exactly,
goodbye.
Exactly. And late blight is even more devastating. That just will melt your – they're done, you know, if you get that. So these have resistance to both of them. There are other varieties through Johnny's Seeds is carrying them. They're like Mountain Magic, Mountain Merit, some of these now. But a lot – you're going to see this more and more now coming out as they've found now the genes for this resistance. They're going to put it into more of the varieties, and then, you know, it's going to solve some of these problems. But it's something I would definitely ask my growers about.
Well, it's too late for me this year.
Right.
Because I start my seeds are about
sure.
ready to take outside and
most people
toughen
have.
Up.
But some of the nurseries, some of the smaller, more family-owned nurseries actually have grown some of these resistant varieties now because people are asking for them, especially with early blight, because oftentimes when you get it, it just keeps coming back and you need to break that.
Go to your family nursery
yes.
and ask them for
resistant to the blights.
There you go.
Yeah.
New variety, relatively new, is this indigo variety. Which have like a dark purple or blue skin. They look like giant blueberries, and they have a very high level of antioxidants. That's something that's relatively new. It's certainly not an heirloom. It was
right.
something that was
right.
bred in order to achieve that effect.
Mm-hmm.
Indigo rose, for instance, is one of the names for that particular variety.
Mm-hmm.
And some of my favorite heirlooms, which you can't get except with seeds, there's a variety called Silvery Fir Tree, which is a Russian variety that is kind of a semi-dwarf plant with very lacy leaves. It almost looks like you're growing holly instead of a tomato. And they're perfect patio tomatoes because they only get about chest high if you put them in a big bucket with Miracle-Gro.
Sure.
And this is the cool part about them for this area. They produce tomatoes after only 52 days.
Wow.
And they're beefsteak mm-hmm. shape, but they're mm-hmm. juicy. So.
Right.
So if you can find those anywhere, Silvery Fir Tree is the variety.
And that's why I would tell people the weather this weekend is going to be very cold. They're looking at frost warnings, things like that. So if you have any of the tomato plants, pepper plants, if you got beautiful flowers over the weekend or something, bring them in, because even if it doesn't freeze, those late – those temperatures at night are devastating to those plants.
When should you plant your garden in northern Wisconsin? I have heard old-timers say you should wait until June 10th, which is really tough when you get frost in September.
Sure.
But we have climate change, too, and a lot of us are in warmer climate zones than even 20 years ago.
Right.
So what's safe?
The normal frost date was always May 15th. But as you can see, that's this weekend, and we're going to probably have frost. So Memorial Day was always the old-time standard, Memorial Day. But I know up north in Marathon County, they don't plant until the first week of June. And what it is what you were just saying. Get the varieties that are shorter day growing. So when you get your vegetables, read the tags. If they're 90 days or less, you probably
good
be
luck
all
with
right.
That.
Right. It's difficult, but you can find them. They have peppers that are, you know, like King of the North, which is a shorter day, you know, things like that.
The Gypsy hybrid pepper is a sweet pepper that produces fruit after only 55 days.
There you go.
And it's a sweet pepper, but it's not the thick, blocky bell pepper type. It's it's thinner. It's better for frying and salads.
Right.
But that's one that I'd recommend. And you can get that just about anywhere. You can get that at Fleet Farm or practically any place that sells vegetables.
Right.
To go back to your question about when can you plant your garden, there are certain things that you can easily plant now. Lettuces, radish, things that can take some cold. The cold products like broccoli and cauliflower and cabbages.
Yeah. Peas can go
peas, yes, can take the cold. It's tomatoes, peppers.
Eggplant is very, very sensitive.
And the soil needs to be warm,
yes,
too.
It does.
It's not just
yes.
freezing or frost. You have to worry about that soil being warm enough for the plants to thrive.
55 degrees. So you're not really getting a jump on your tomatoes by planting your tomatoes on
when
May 10th.
When the soil's still cold.
When is the best time to separate plants like hostas?
I do mine right away in the spring. When the little heads just start showing, I dig them up and carve them up. If you wait until they grow, then they will survive, but they'll look funny. You know, they won't turn into a nice round.
So right now is probably a good time to do it.
And that's true for really any perennial. When it's smaller, it's just more manageable and easier to plant. Sometimes, though, if it blooms in spring, you want to wait till it's done blooming or you lose the bloom for the year.
And we also have a question on our Facebook page. Should I cover my rose plants this weekend with the cold weather and the frost? They're already well established.
A lot of things in the garden are hardened off. I mean, it hasn't been that warm yet. But if it has some buds on it, or it looks like maybe, you know, you have some very new stuff that came out, it might not hurt to just put something over it for the at night, you know, to protect it.
Generally, perennials are okay. They're acclimated to the adjusting temperatures. It's when, as Lynn said, the buds. So if it's about to bloom, sometimes those buds might be, you've heard the phrase, nipped in the bud. That's where that comes from. Yeah.
Nick Schultz and Lynn Kane are Master Gardener volunteers. This is the Route 51 11th Annual Garden Talk Show. It's Garden Talk just for the frigid northern half of the state. Yes. And our lines are wide open. If you've got questions about things you're trying to grow or things that are happening in your yard, give us a call, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page. We'd also like to have you share with us some of your favorite recipes or family gardening stories. I'm Glenn Moberg. This is Route 51 on the Ideas Network. Here's Tennessee Ernie Ford.
See that watermelon hanging on the vine? I wish that watermelon could be mine. The farmer must be careless without a lick of sense, or he wouldn't leave it hanging on the vine. Cornbread is sweet, pork chops are good, black-eyed peas are mighty, mighty fine. But give me, oh give me, I really wish you would, that watermelon hanging on the vine.
Supporters of Wisconsin Public Radio include the Eau Claire Children's Theater, Thimbleberry Books, and Overture Center, proud sponsors of WPR programs. Your business can join our list of contributors. Details at WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from the Wausau River District, celebrating the history of Wausau during Downtown Open House Wausau, May 14th. Wausau's past is revealed as historic sites open their doors to the public. WausauRiverDistrict.com.
Here in North Central Wisconsin, we take pride in expanding on the topics we feel would be of interest to you on our weekly regional talk program, Route 51. The program airs live at 10 on Thursday mornings and is rebroadcast Friday nights at 7. Hopefully you've heard the program and like what we have to offer. Well, here's another way for you to like us by hitting the like button on our Route 51 Facebook page. You'll receive news, pictures, and related information about upcoming and past programs. Find us on Facebook at Route 51 Show.
Strawberry feels forever. Strawberry feels forever. Strawberry feels forever.
The Beatles taking us into our final segment of the Route 51 Garden Show with Lynn Kane and Nick Schultz. I'm Glenn Moberg, 1-800-780-9742. If you've got a question about gardening in our inclement northern Wisconsin climate, and when you call us, please be patient. We will get to you. Don't hang up on us. Be patient. And let's go to the phones right now. We've got Bernadette in Wausau. Bernadette, you're on Route 51.
Good morning. Last summer, I planted a borage plant. It's an herb with purple flowers and yellow center. Anyway, it's supposed to be a perennial, and I haven't seen it pop up yet. What is the normal time frame where this may show itself?
Actually, I believe that that borage is a reseeding annual rather than a perennial. So sometimes it's confused by you think it comes back every year, but it's the new seeds. So it probably needs to warm up a little bit. It's a beautiful plant, well worth growing.
It is. Last year, I was actually eating the blossoms. They taste really good.
Yeah.
And the bees love them. So I know you were talking about the bee population, and that's a good plant to have in your yard. Okay, well, I guess I'll just keep my eye open for any reseeding that might happen.
Yeah. One of the things that we love about gardening is that it teaches us patience, you know? So.
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you, Bernadette. And again, that number is 1-800-780-9742. 1-800-780-9742. If you've got gardening questions, if you call right now, we might be able to squeeze a couple more phone calls in for our resident experts. My Wisconsin Wildlife Phrenology Calendar, which they don't make anymore, but I've got an old one because the seasons and what happens doesn't change. It tells me that May 17th, 5 days from now, is when I should start looking for morel mushrooms.
I already have morels in my yard.
You do?
Yes. And so, but this is about the time of year, yes, that they will start coming. So you go hunting and finding them, and they're very good, yes.
They're very distinctive looking. Is there anything that you shouldn't eat that they can be confused with?
Generally not. They're pretty much their own. You can go online and look it up, but they have distinct, like they're hollow, you know, the things like that, you know, are very distinct to only them.
And they've got that, I don't know what you would call the top.
Like a hood almost.
A hood, yeah. It looks kind of like a honeycomb on the top.
Yes, they're very, very, usually you always know that's what they are. They're not confused too much with anything
and
else.
I find morels around the brush pile that I've got in the wooded area in our backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got limbs from ash trees there. Somebody told me once that they like... ash trees that are kind of decomposing.
Right. And I've always heard they like elm trees. So if you had, like, a lot of the elms died and the roots were still in the ground where they were still decomposing, and that they like that same. But generally with morels, there's some symbiosis with things that are in the soil. That's why a lot of mushroom growers, how you can buy these kits and things like that, you can't grow morels because they're very, very difficult because they need some kind of native thing that's in the soil and the wood, and that's why. So if you can find a place where they're coming up.
Do you have a favorite recipe for morel mushrooms?
Just frying them in butter with a little steak.
That's it. It's so simple. Fry them in butter with, I like to sprinkle tarragon on them, which is kind of a sweet licorice-y tasting herb.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, simple is always good.
Let's talk about some unusual kinds of gardening, wooden pallet gardening, straw bale, raised bed.
Those are all great options for small space gardening. There are extensive resources about how to set up a straw bale garden. The important thing is that you have to basically cure your bales in a process that I believe takes about 21 days. Go to the extension website to learn more about that. Pallet gardens are basically planting put a pallet upright and fill the space either with soil, or you could put the 4-inch pots across it. That's probably a little easier. It's friendly if you have some issues with bending over to garden. It puts it at a level that's more convenient. Lynn has actually done both of those in her yard.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, right now I have bales from last year that are very decomposed, and now I'm putting potatoes in them because the second year is supposed to be the better year to put. So I have my potatoes going, and then by the end of this year, they'll be rotten down to nothing. So you can just mix them right in with the soil then. So.
And Rick Ryer, our executive producer, informs me that my picture of the morels that I picked out of my backyard are now on our Route 51 Facebook page. So if you'd like to see what they look like, there you go.
Yeah, they're very
there you
unique.
Go.
You know, morels are such a pretty plant, and one of the things I really enjoy about gardening is looking for things that are both that you can both eat and are ornamental. I have a couple of suggestions if you would like them that are beautiful while they're growing and also good to eat. There's a dragon tongue bean, and it's got this mottled pattern through it that's just wonderful. And these are all things I'm trying this year for the first time, so I can't tell you how good they're going to be. Something called dancer eggplant. It's electric blue.
Really?
Yeah, so it kind of goes to the indigo tomatoes that you were talking about earlier. And then a red okra. Okra is actually in the hibiscus family, so you think of those big flowers that are so striking. White flowers, red stems. So while you're waiting for the fruit, you'll be able to enjoy the...
And I've also, in my garden now, I've started growing dry beans. So a lot of people grow beans, like green beans, that they want to pick and eat fresh. But I've also started growing some varieties that I leave dry down, and then I can dry the beans and use them in baked beans or use them in stews, and because beans are considered to be very healthy.
I really like
for
the Italian pole beans, the really thick, long Italian beans, you seem to never be able to find in the grocery store.
Sure.
No. And the pole beans seem to work better for me than the bush variety.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go and buy seeds, often you'll only find the bush variety.
Right. And that's why, again, sometimes if you go into these catalogs and stuff, you can find all kinds of very interesting beans, and you can grow your own beans and have them. And, and you know, like you say, some of them you can dry. You can eat some fresh and save the rest dry and use them in stews and things like that. So,
ladies, what's the most important thing about gardening to you? Nick, let's start with you.
For me, it's the benefit that I get from internally by just being able to get my hands in the dirt and keep things growing and the beauty of the earth.
Lynn King?
For me, I really enjoy sharing, you know, with people. I'll be working in the garden. Someone will just stop by. Oh, look at those beautiful flowers, and it strikes the conversation. So
thank you so much for being with us again this year. Here's Nick Lucas.
And if I kiss you in the garden, in the moonlight, will you pardon me? Come tiptoe through the tulips with me.
That song was originally recorded in 1944. We want to thank today's guests, Portage County Master Gardener volunteers Nick Schultz and Lynn Kane. A reminder, you can read Nick's column, The Perpetual Gardener, in the Portage County Gazette. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer and on-air producer, Rick Ryer. Special music today by Eric Clapton, Arlo Guthrie, John McCutcheon, Guy Clark, The Decemberists, Tennessee Ernie Ford, The Beatles, and Nick Lucas. Next week on Route 51, we talk to Susan Reitz about her new documentary, Missing Threads, the story of the Wisconsin Indian Child Welfare Act. Reminder to follow us on Facebook, and if you missed a portion of the program, you can hear it in its entirety Friday evening at 7 p.m. on WHRM 90.9 FM Wausau. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town and into the garden.